This is part two. We're spending some time this weekend. Discussing one chapter from First Canto, Srimad Bhagavatam. Dhritarashtra quits home is the chapter, chapter 13. And this morning we spent some time introducing Vidura and his life before going on pilgrimage, his experience while on pilgrimage, the purification he underwent for a long time, and gradually, by the grace of the Lord, coming in contact with Maitreya Muni, posing questions before Maitreya, and gathering all that his heart desired to achieve perfection in self-realization. And then, following that, his compassion by returning back to the royal palace in Hastinapur, the reception that came for him when he returned, everyone as if coming back to life. Is a very similar discussion, or a narration also in this first canto, when Krishna returns from Hastinapur back to Dwarka, and the separation that was being felt by the residents of Hastinapur as he leaves, and the restoring of the life of those who were in Dwarka, missing Krishna's association. One of the even in the first canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, or we could say, from the very beginning, there's this churning of transcendental emotion, or the narration of those who are attached to Krishna, and how that attachment, once attached to Krishna, the Supreme Lord has this wonderful way of churning that emotion, churning that attachment, so the attachment becomes all the more flavorful and all the more increased. And so this is even in the first canto, what to speak of as the cantos go on and go on. So another very important message in this whole canto, this first canto, is how attachment to the devotee of Krishna has the same effect. Just like when there's interludes where the sages asked Sutta Goswami to answer six primary questions. And so that's in the first chapter, and the second and third chapter is the answer to those questions. And in the third chapter, one of the questions is, please describe the appearances of the Lord in this world. So he does. He gives a list. And then after completing that list, he describes specifically that Krishna is the original personality of Godhead, from whom all other appearances of the Lord emanate. So he's the Swayam Bhagavan. And then the last question ends with the answer, the question of, where have religious principles taken shelter now that Krishna has departed from this world? And that is, Krishna makes his appearance to create that atmosphere where religious principles will flourish. Pritranaya sadhunam vinashaya shaduskritam dharma sangsthapanartaya. So he sambhavami, he manifests himself. And now that Krishna has gone, all that auspiciousness by his presence has reestablished principles of religion. And he specifically has expressed the message of Bhagavad Gita, as he says to Arjuna, to reestablish that message of transcendence, to reestablish the parampara, which was broken. So, after hearing all that, the sages, they want to hear more. And they appeal to Sutta Goswami, tell us more, tell us more. And so he begins narrating, starting 4, 5, and in chapters 6, he starts narrating about Narada's meeting with Narada's meeting with Vyasadeva. Narada tells about his previous life and how he became perfect. He became perfect in the same way that this chapter is narrating. He became perfect by the association of perfected souls. That's the system. One is fortunate enough to get such association, then one's life can be greatly, greatly, greatly benefited. Hare Krishna. One can become greatly benefited. And Narada describes how he became benefited. And so he instructs further from that perfected position how Vyasadeva can become perfect. And Vyasadeva then describes what he did after receiving that instruction. He performed exactly what his spiritual master Narada told him to do. He told him to perfect his perfect knowledge, his already perfect knowledge, to make it completely perfect by describing in one literature simply the activities of the Supreme Lord Krishna. So he did that. And after compiling that literature, he instructed the same to Shukadeva Goswami. And then the sages of Naimisharanya, they ask a very important question. They get a very important answer. The question they asked is, could you please explain why Shukadeva was even interested in this literature? Because Shukadeva was already a liberated soul. He was beyond any contact with material nature. He was beyond any implication with karma and the modes of nature. So he didn't need anything. He was already liberated. Why did he take interest? Why did he take interest in this one more book that Vyasadeva has just compiled? So he, the Sutta Goswami gives the answer that it's because this literature, Srimad Bhagavatam, is for Paramahansas. We're going to come across that word in this chapter, Paramahansa. It's for Paramahansas. It's for persons who are beyond any interest in anything material. That was Shukadeva Goswami, even within, before his birth, within the womb of his mother. He was he was situated in Brahman realization. And so as far as he was concerned, inside the womb, outside the womb, it's all one. I'll just stay here. And besides, outside the womb, then I have to deal with the material energy. This is much safer. I'll just stay here. So for 16 years, he stayed there. And it took, naturally, Vyasadeva's mother was a little distressed, a little uncomfortable probably too. So Vyasa went to Krishna and said, Krishna, please come to my home and do something. But Krishna came and promised to Shukadeva Goswami, don't worry, I promise you, you'll be protected from Maya. Okay, I'll go then. And he went. So like that, then the sages are, they're so delighted to hear about this appearance of Srimad Bhagavatam is still continuing from that first question, where have religious principles taken shelter now that Krishna has left the planet? The answer that was given is, Krishna left, but the Srimad Bhagavatam appeared shortly after Krishna's departure. The metaphor is used, just as the sun may set in the western horizon, but then again on the eastern horizon, the full moon, as brilliant as the sun, has appeared. So Krishna is the setting sun, his disappearance, and then Srimad Bhagavatam, shortly after, made its appearance. Right? Krishna disappeared, and at the beginning of Kali Yuga, when Maharaj Parikshit was the king, the first king in Kali Yuga, and then he was cursed by the Brahmin boy, Sringi, to die in 7 days. So that circumstance precipitated the narrating of Srimad Bhagavatam. So Bhagavatam made its appearance in the world. And the metaphor is used with the brilliance of the sun, but the soothing quality of the moon. Nice. So again, the Srimad Bhagavatam has made its appearance by Vyas writing it and teaching it to Shukadev and Shukadev speaking it. So you can imagine this audience there on the edge of their straw mats wanting to hear more. Tell us more. Just go right ahead and tell us about Krishna. Don't wait. We're very eager to hear. You're qualified to tell all about it because you heard it from Shukadev himself. You were right there. You heard it. And not only that, you're such a qualified person. You assimilated all that and you realized it all. So, narrate about Krishna. And then Suta Goswami says, you're such a wonderful audience. I'll tell you all about Krishna. And then he begins speaking about the Pandavas. And so the question arises, Pandavas, we wanted to hear about Krishna. But Prabhupada explains, as is appropriate for this also, this chapter, Krishna Katha is also describing those who are in relation to Krishna, Krishna's devotees. Just like hearing about Jai and Vijay at the gates of Vaikuntha. Naturally, you're going to hear about Lord Vishnu because they're servants of Vishnu and anything that they do reflects directly on Lord Vishnu. So when they made their little mistake and didn't allow the four Kumaras to enter, Supreme Lord Vishnu personally came and he made his apology. I'm very sorry. Of course, he didn't do anything. It was Jaya Vijaya that did something. But he made the apology because acting on behalf of the Lord has that kind of gravity, that kind of significance. The Lord accepts it as his own act. And then the servant of the Lord accepts that they're acting only on behalf of the Lord. They're just instruments. There's no credit that goes to them. It's all the action of the Lord and I'm just trying to perform some service as an instrument of the Lord. So, when Vidura returns to the royal palace, it's very much like Krishna returning back to Dwarka. The Lord returning and the Lord's pure devotee returning are on the same level. They're not the same personality, but it's the same level. Because the pure devotee is carrying the Lord in their heart. So one can say also the Supreme Lord is in the heart of his devotee returning to the royal palace. Of course, Krishna is in the heart of every living entity. But this is the special situation with a pure devotee because of pure devotion, the quality of pure devotion. Krishna discloses his identity. Before, in our case, he's concealing his identity. He's giving us little messages as super soul. This is the proper way to conduct your activities in this world. Don't do that. It's very foolish. yes, you should do this other thing. He's giving inspiration from within the heart. He's giving mayadhyakshena prakriti suyate sacharashram. He's giving to the living entities, he's giving his direction. He's supervising the material energy, prakriti, and he's giving remembrance, he's giving knowledge. He's also giving forgetfulness to the forgetful souls. Sarva shachaham riddhi sannivishto matak smritir gyanam apohanam cha. So when Vidura returns, it's a grand time for the royal palace, not just because one of their old buddies came back, but they're missing a lot, one of the royal family members. But that's there too. But the transcendental part is that his life has become perfect, and they can see that. You can in the presence of a realized soul, that quality is perceivable. So they could understand just by his return that's what was happening. And so that's where we ended up this morning, or today, this afternoon. And the reception has been executed, and starting with text 8, then Maharaj Yudhisthira, the MC of the show, he starts speaking. He addresses. He's the emperor of the whole world, addressing a pure devotee in the world. So that's the scene, and here's the questions that he starts presenting. My uncle, Maharaj Yudhisthira said, do you remember how you always protected us, along with our mother, from all sorts of calamities? Your partiality, like the wings of a bird, saved us from poisoning and arson. Partiality. From a material perspective, Vidura was partial. From a transcendental perspective, Vidura was not partial. And Prabhupada explains this very, very nicely in the purport here. Vidura had affection for his brother, his elder brother, and he also had affection for this and for the sons of Dhritarashtra. But his behavior towards those sons did not seem like he was liking them so much, because he was getting on his elder brother's case. Why this intrigue? Stop it. And Duryodhana, you stop this business of always trying to plot against your cousins. So the idea for a transcendentalist to say such things, it's not one of condescension or judgment or low, you know, bringing that person into a lower position. It's just the opposite. It's appropriate behavior to bring it's out of compassion to bring a person to a higher position. So he was feeling affection, and in that affection, appropriately expressed. Is that your new set of Bhagavatams? That's the new set?
No, the new set.
Ah.
This is just the first candle split into three.
Okay. Your new set has the current. Okay. So we're reading from chapter 13. We're on text 8 right now. So in relation to the Pandavas, he also had affection. He displayed that affection differently. The affection was obviously because Pandu was deceased, and these were his brother's children without the protection of their father. He was looking after them. And right in the verse, Yudhisthira says, like a bird protecting the little birds by spreading his big wing, Vidura was giving protection to the young. And from external or material appearances, he was being partial to the Pandavas and on the case of his brother in Duryodhan. Once again, he was actually equal in his affection, but he displayed the affection differently. Just like when he returned to the palace. Same thing. He was dealing with everybody in a rather common manner, because he was addressing everybody in that public setting. They asked him questions, he gave his responses, and the treatment was equal. Then, when he had the opportunity, he spoke in a very specific way to Dhritarashtra. We're all very familiar with how he did what he did. We'll read the verses, the actual words that he spoke, and they're very strong words. But those very strong words were also out of compassion. It wasn't something else. It was affection, compassion, caring. So what Maharaj Yudhisthira's statement here is, you were partial to us. So it sometimes appears that a saintly personality exhibits part, just like sometimes it appears that Krishna exhibits partial behavior. That was what Hiranyakashipu said at the death of Hiranyaksha. He was criticizing Krishna. I mean, that was one of his main programs, criticizing Lord Vishnu. He said, this Lord Vishnu, he's like a child. You just say some flattering things to him, and he'll come and just, oh, you said some flattering things to me, and he'll take care of that person. He's just like a child. And so he's showing partiality to his devotees because they flatter him. But I'm not going to flatter him. I'm going to kill him. He's my enemy. Just like that. It's not that because Krishna just gets butted up by people who say nice things, so he gets all google-eyed and does these things of protection. He understands, rather, he's impartial to all living entities, and yayatamam prapadyante tangstadaiva bhajamyaham. As those who approach him with friendship, he reciprocates in friendship. Those who approach him in love, he reciprocates in love. Those who approach him, you are my enemy, all right, I'll be your enemy. He doesn't take an inimical attitude towards those who see him as enemy. All right, very nice. And he gives them liberation too. So it appears he's favorable to this group and disinclined to that group. But actually he's just reciprocating according to their prapadyante, according to how they surrender to him, regard him. He just reciprocates accordingly, without any attachment. Like a loving father would be equal towards each child in the family, and according to the regard that the child has for their parent, and affection this way and affection that way. So that's Krishna's position, and Vidura similarly. He actually, as this chapter goes on, we'll see, he actually had a lot of affection for his elder brother. He deployed his wisdom, Vidura. He gave, imparted that wisdom to his brother for that reason. And he gave, naturally so, in the absence of Pandu, he gave protection to the Pandavas. Specifically, he's referring to this poison and to arson. So, there's mentioned in Mahabharata, it's discussed here in the purport also, when part of the intrigue, old cunning Dhritarashtra had this idea I'll build a very nice house in the country for the Pandavas, and we'll build it of highly flammable materials, and just to make sure, we'll paint it with shellac, because it ignites very quickly. And one day we'll just send somebody over there and in the dead of night and accidentally strike a match and poof, there it goes. And it'll ignite so quickly. Unfortunately, our nephews will just burn up in the fire. It was the plot. So then, very sweetly, he made this nice offer. We'll build you this wonderful... And so they thought, that's very nice. Uncle Dhritarashtra is going to build us a nice place. And so as they were leaving, Vidura spoke some indirect words. So this goes on sometimes in great epics. Even in the life of Sanatana Goswami and Rupa Goswami, there was some situation like that where some money was put in the hands of a grocer, and in some indirect language Rupa Goswami indicated. He didn't say it directly. There's money with grocer so-and-so, and if you need it to take care of getting away from Nawab Hussein Shah, go ahead. Just go to him and he'll take care of it. He said it in some indirect way. But Sanatana Goswami could understand. So like this, Vidura said that life is very, very precious, and it can be destroyed by means other than just by a sharp weapon. But those who are very intelligent, something like this, those who are very intelligent, if they understand the nature of the soul, they can endure beyond even such things as fire. So Kunti was hearing this and she couldn't figure out, what's this double talk? My dear son, Yudhisthira, what did Uncle Vidura just say? And he Yudhisthira could understand. He is indirectly indicating there's a plot, some attempt will be made on her life, not by a weapon, but by fire. And then, of course, later on, when it was the specific evil deed was plotted out in detail, you know, the dark moon night, and the servant was to set the house on fire, so Vidura disguised himself, and he indicated it's going to happen. So be ready on that particular night. There's a tunnel, and you can escape through that tunnel. So that's what happened. Vidura, so he was protecting, and the Pandavas had that sense of being protected. We all have some idea what that's like, to feel protected and to not feel protected. They always felt protected by their wise Uncle Vidura. So that's the first words that were spoken by... It's also a cultural point that when we're receiving someone, it's always a nice thing, it's a culturally proper thing, to, although there may be a very long-standing relationship between you and that person, but it's always a nice thing to directly articulate your appreciation for that person in such and such manner. I held an Istogosti in New York not so long ago and made this point specifically, that it sometimes happens, I would say all too often it happens, when there's common dealings between persons, just like there's a Bhakti Vriksha group that meets here regularly, or Prithu Shrav and Donna Kelly might visit a certain group of people in a place regularly and just become so familiar with those persons, you just take it for granted that they understand you, you understand them, and everything's nice. And what happens in those kind of situations is, because familiarity breeds contempt, if that conscious articulation of recognition and appreciation doesn't take place, it's not the same. It's courtesy, it's culture, it's part of our loving exchanges with one another, and certainly Yudhisthira Maharaj is very expert in this matter. So that's the first thing he did. He just expressed his words of direct appreciation that he was feeling and acknowledged for so long about his relationship with Vidura. And then next he started asking him about his travels. He specifically asked him about what places of pilgrimage did he go to. We sometimes do like that with one another. Somebody is going, just come back from a pilgrimage to visit, and we ask how what was that visit like, and particularly we're interested not, you know, how did things go with your relatives, but what was it like when you went to Vrindavan? What was it like when you went to, just like the kids came back from camp, we just ask them, what did you like most about it? It brings to their memory what that thing is that they appreciated. So Yudhisthira Maharaj is doing like that. What were the places of pilgrimage that you went to? He didn't want a travelogue. He wanted to hear Krishna Katha. Again, it's a nice thing in the series of reading, because I've read through it several times now in the past few weeks. In each of the questions, because of Vidura's quality, each of the questions brings out Krishna Katha. Something is about the past, something is about his travels, something is about Dwaraka, because they're naturally concerned, the Pandavas are very concerned, what's happening with our relatives, and particularly with Krishna in Dwaraka. So then, in text 10, there's a very important verse. We discussed it this afternoon, but mention it again. In this text 10, there's a verse that Prabhupada often quoted. I'll read the translation. My Lord devotees, like your good self, so this is Vidura being addressed by Maharaj Yudhisthira. Devotees like your good self are verily holy places personified. Because you carry the personality of Godhead within your heart, you turn all places into places of pilgrimage. And it's translated in different ways in different places when Prabhupada refers to this. You are yourself a place of pilgrimage. Or because of your quality, you make any place you go a place of pilgrimage. And why is that so? Because where a saintly person goes, what do? Just take the life of Srila Prabhupada. I remember once I heard this lecture of Srila Prabhupada speaking in Detroit. Of course, this is before the fabulous Fisher Mansion era. It was, they had just a big white house, big house in a residential neighborhood. The place was packed with devotees. So when Prabhupada came to visit, his opening address included this notion. He said, what makes this house any different than any other house in this neighborhood? We say it's Krishna's temple, Hare Krishna temple, but it's just a house in the neighborhood. What makes it special? What makes anything different? And because here, there's Krishna Katha. There's the chanting of the holy name. There's the worship of Krishna's form. There's the narration of Krishna's message. There's the execution of all types of service to Krishna. So that therefore it becomes a place of pilgrimage. And by those, each of those activities, it transforms the place. It's no longer in this material world, but the place becomes spiritualized. And that's the whole idea also behind Sankirtan, the performance of the chanting of the holy name. And I remember the training that we got, because when we went out on Sunday, I came to stay at the temple in Boston. The first temple I joined is in Boston. On Monday, I was out in the van with everybody else for 12 hours, first day on Harinam Sankirtan. 12 hours. We came. We didn't even come back for lunch. They brought lunch to us. We came back for evening meal and back out again. First day. So, you can imagine some spaced out kid going out for 12 hours doing the same thing like that. So something had to keep us going. So they would explain what it was that we were doing. And one of the explanations that we got was that when chanting the holy name of the Lord, Krishna is present. And when Krishna is present, it sanctifies the place. So the place that was Boston Common. Just over that way is the main shopping street, and just over that way is the main office buildings for the city. I guess state office buildings too. And a big park and two subway lines. It was a good spot. A lot of traffic, especially during lunch hour. We were there all day long. And then the understanding was that that place was becoming sanctified by the chanting of the holy name. And sure enough, by the end of the summer, I could understand that was a fact. That persons who would come, there were persons who would come from during their lunch hour and either, just hang out, and if they were just hanging out, they would hear. Some would come to understand and then come and join us. Some would come to ridicule. But they would, all classes of people would become purified. I have some detailed, nice stories about that, but it sanctifies the place. And sometime if you happen to have the good fortune to visit New York City, good fortune or ill fortune, either way, there's 22nd Avenue is a must for you to go visit there. It's because that's the first place where the Hare Krishna movement began, where Prabhupada would go and chant Hare Krishna in front of, amongst a group of young Western kids that didn't know if they were sitting on the ceiling or the floor. They were an unusual group of young people. But you enter into that place. And the spiritual vibration is very, it's very noticeable. Suresh isn't here, but he was just visiting in New York. And ask him when he comes back for a little testimonial. But that, you experience that when you enter 22nd Avenue. The vibration is still there. So the point is this, by spiritual activity and by the, especially where spiritual activity is performed by a pure devotee, it spiritualizes the place. And therefore the statement of Maharaj Yudhisthira, that Vidura, persons like you, you don't have to go to Rishikesh, Haridwar, Prayag, and so forth, Vrindavan. Just go to a pure devotee, and there you will get the purification of going to the place of pilgrimage. And often, right here in this purport, but often Prabhupada made the same point. When you go to the place of pilgrimage, let's say you go to Vrindavan, one thing that's a must do is take bath in the Jamuna. Another thing that you must do, visit the temples. But as he explains here, that's your visit isn't complete until and take the opportunity to hear from the saintly persons who reside in that sacred place. There's a verse in the Bhagavatam that says, I'll simplify it, but what it says is the animals, they also take bath in the river. And they may also walk in the streets and pass by the temple. But so when we go there, we should not just do those things. We should be something a little bit by our faculties, a little beyond that, just to the taking the bath and the walking by the temple or taking darshan at the temple, we should hear. And that's the message of this chapter. Vidura is being glorified, but the chapter is glorifying the importance of hearing from perfected souls like Vidura, because it completely sanctifies one's existence. Even if one's existence is bad, saintly persons are capable of purifying even bad places, or even purifying places of pilgrimage. That's also being described. When pilgrims go to pilgrimage places, they deposit their sinful reactions there. So the saintly persons, when they go, they burn up those sinful reactions. They purify even the places of pilgrimage by their intense devotional service. So in this whole chapter, that particular verse is the most often quoted by Prabhupada in the whole, out of the whole chapter. Yudhisthira Maharaj glorifying Vidura. So then he goes on, my dear uncle, text 11. You must have visited Dwarka. In that holy place are our friends and well-wishers, the descendants of Yadu, who are always wrapped in service of Lord Sri Krishna. You might have seen them or heard about them. Are they still living happily in their abodes? That's the end of his questions, text 11. Prabhupada takes some time in the purport just to focus on this, the Sanskrit in the verse, Krishna Devata. So the explanation he gives is that from Yudhisthira Maharaj's side, he's offering equal respect to Vidura. In a couple of verses it's also said that Vidura was treated like a demigod. Of course, he was in the at this point in time, he's in the renounced order, and he's self-realized. So he's treated with that kind of respect. But the members of the Yadu dynasty, they're also treated with that same respect. And so one is a sannyasi, at least at present, and the others, they're still engaged in their family duties, but equal respect. So what is it that one is offering that respect to? The respect is going to those who are steeped in thought of Krishna, or as Prabhupada is saying here in the purport, those who are always wrapped in the service of Lord Krishna. I'm reading from the purport. Either remaining at home or leaving home. The real qualification of a pure devotee is to become wrapped in thought of Krishna favorably. That is, specifically, knowing well that Lord Krishna is the absolute personality of Godhead. So, where you find such personalities, those personalities are capable of sanctifying our existence, and therefore respect should go to those personalities. Just again, this is the theme of the whole chapter, that how to recognize a sadhu, the benefit of associating with a sadhu, how to get full benefit from that association. Very important topic in spiritual life. As we mentioned in the class this afternoon, but some of you weren't there, we all have to be religious. Like Prabhupada makes this point, that religion means laws given by God, and religious means to follow those laws. Just like saying the government creates laws and a good citizen is one who follows those laws. Simple. Government creates laws and good citizens follow the laws. So a religious person follows the laws of God. But religious persons also require the association of sadhus. And why is that? Because sadhus take that quality of goodness, that is the law-abiding quality of living one's life by, or abiding by, the indications of Scripture, how you should lead your life. Do good things. Avoid bad things. I've had many people say this when performing Sankirtan. Oh, this is very nice. I'm also religious. I believe in doing good things. You heard? I mean, explicitly, they say like that. This is very... Could you tell me a little bit about your ideas? Oh, very nice. I am also very religious. I believe in doing good and not hurting other people. It's, you know, do good and don't do bad. And that's what... That's their understanding of what being religious is. And that's what being religious is. A sadhu's message, and the message of Srimad Bhagavatam, goes beyond the quality of goodness, and it transports or transforms that quality of goodness to transcendence. And the sadhu is the one who delivers that message of transcendence. It's Shukadeva Goswami that delivered Srimad Bhagavatam to the sages who are all in the quality of goodness. And amongst those sages, Sutta, who heard it, and is now describing it. Or Maitreya, who heard it directly from Krishna, as he was explaining to Uddhava. And then Maitreya to Vidura. Now Vidura, they're opening their hearts to receive transcendental knowledge. And they know the value of that. They're eager for that. And therefore, they're saying Krishna Devata. And please tell us also about the members of the Yadu dynasty. So we're almost finished here with the section we're going to read. So their questions are over, and Vidura, one by one, he answers everything except one thing. The one thing he doesn't answer is, what about the Yadus? Because the Yadus are gone. And he doesn't want to say it. He doesn't want to say it for a number of reasons. One is it's hard to say it. It's hard to say such things. And another is that he has such affection for the Pandavas, he would never want to see the Pandavas hurt. So they're going to have to find out eventually, but he doesn't want to be the deliverer of that hurt. So he doesn't say it. And then Prabhupada says something else very nice, so I'm going to read exactly what he says in the text 13. Vidura did not disclose the unpalatable and unbearable incident because calamities come of their own accord. And here's what Prabhupada writes. According to the Niti Shastra, what's the Niti Shastra? Niti Shastra? Like Chanakya Pandit's sayings, that's considered Niti Shastra. Sayings, little epithets of, you know, good advice in life, Niti Shastra. Or Prabhupada says they're civic codes. According to Niti Shastra, one should not speak an unpalatable truth to cause distress to others. Now this is speaking about a motivation. One may have to say an unpalatable truth. Sometimes it's unavoidable in life. But one should not be eager to do that, and more importantly, or more specifically, one should not do so in order to deliver hurt, knowing that this is going to deliver hurt to the other soul. Let me say it. So one should be not like that. That's just civic code to live by. A civilized person lives like this. Distress comes upon us of its own accord, in its own way, by the laws of nature. So one should not aggravate it by propaganda. Now, the way that people live their lives today, propaganda is a way, it sells things, newspapers, magazines, media of any kind, television, that grabs, it sells. So that's what people become accustomed to. And we just follow like dum-dums along that way of life. We also do the same thing. I'm thinking, media and television particularly just erodes culture. People become just culture-less. So better to have such literature as Srimad Bhagavatam so that we can understand how to be rich in culture and be guided by the kind of conduct that's pleasing and makes one want to be in the company of such a cultured person. Even just in civic matters, or to speak of higher and spiritual matters, just day-to-day exchanges with one another. Calamity comes of its own, this is right in the verse, calamity comes of its own accord. You don't have to aggravate it by making propaganda. Did you know this? Blah, 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 blah. And the mind just becomes, and practically speaking, it's just being accelerated by internet and so many other blah, blah, blah systems. And people just get spun out at lightning speed, the speed of the electron. They just spin. It's insidious. Because people that don't have any culture get behind that powerful thing and just go to town. So, browsing the internet is something I've vowed I will not learn. I mean, if somebody knows what they're doing and they're careful, then fine. But I'm a little social commentary, but I'm shocked at how... my understanding of how kids are educated today is they don't even have it. Many of their classes, there's no textbook. They have to have a computer. They have to know how to get on the internet and go and read their textbook on the computer. Which means once they know how to do that, they know how to do all the other garbage and pollute their brain. But hey, that's the way of life, right? Brain pollution. I'm scared of the whole system. That's a little social commentary. But our advice in the Bhagavatam is to very carefully avoid that program. Bad news, bad, some misfortune, and making broad propaganda about this misfortune, that misfortune, that misfortune. There are some things that we do want to know about, like this situation in Yugoslavia and the needs of the devotees to get some assistance. Something just came out about in Mayapur. I didn't forward that like all over the place because I'm too busy. But it's a point of concern. There's the largest flood of the Ganga since 1978. And those of you that have been to Mayapur or will go to Mayapur sometime, when you go before the Nrisimhadev deity, imagine the water being up to the thighs of the deity.
Wow.
Oh, you have to go to Mangalarti in a boat. Or actually they have Mangalarti in three places. In the roof of the Lotus building where the TBC meetings are held, in the roof of the Brahmachari building that's over that away, and then I think on the roof of the library over by the Gurukul. And they can't do anything else, so they just have kirtan all day. And they've very carefully preserved, this is just a little completely on the side from the Bhagavatam message, but they've completely protected the grains because they grow, except for the festival time when there's like 3,000 to 5,000 devotees there, all the rest of the year they grow their own rice and other staples and they store it. So what they decided to do was provide that by boat. They cook it somehow, I guess on the roof somewhere, and then they in big kettles, and then they go out by boat to the starving villagers and distribute it. And the understanding is, on the one hand, it's their religious duty. How could a person who has compassion not do that? But on the other hand, if they don't do that, the villagers will know that they have it. And they're starving. They'll come and take it. They'll come and kill for it because they're starving. So every year it's the former. The former is whatever supply we have, we deplete it in a charitable way in these kind of flood situations. And because it's the worst that it's been in 20-something years, they're also saying, you know, we need some extra help. That I think this, the district of Nadia, has, they know that the devotees do this, so they take their supply, they just give it to the devotees and have the devotees distribute it. I mean, not the entire supply, but part of what we distribute is what the government gives us, because they know that we'll do it very, very carefully and conscientiously. The water has gone down somewhat, so it's not on the rise anymore. It's depleting, but it's not going down fast. So anyways, that's one kind of news that we disclose because it's of concern, well-being of the population there. But one has to do it. The idea here is one should be cautious about disclosing such things. It should be in a mood of giving benefit, not in the mood of shocking and startling and, you know, disturbing the mind and senses over some particular calamity that has come. So Prabhupada goes on, for a compassionate soul like Vidura, especially in his dealings with the beloved Pandavas, it was almost impossible to disclose an unpalatable piece of news like the annihilation of the Yadu dynasty. Therefore, purposely, he refrained from it. We have just a few more verses and this section is done. So, again, it's stated Vidura was treated practically like a godly person and by his relatives. He remained there in the royal palace for one purpose, just for enough time that he could extricate his elder brother from his entanglement. And then this leads to it's like introducing the next topic. The next topic is Vidura's taking his brother on the side and giving him his sharp sadhu-like words. But it's very clear out of all of this that Vidura has no interest in royal comfort. He doesn't want the fanfare. He doesn't want the soft, comfortable place to rest and all nice foods, and that's not at all his interest. He's been on pilgrimage for so many years now, and his hearing, he's beyond any consideration like that. But he is coming back to the royal palace, and he is accepting the respect that's being offered, not for himself, but for the upliftment of his family members. He's offering kind words of instruction to them, words about Krishna to them, words of his realizations to them. But his main focus is Dhritarashtra. Prabhupada explains it very clearly. His dealing with Yudhisthira, this is again this equalness, his dealing with Yudhisthira was fanning the spark of his devotion, which was very nice to do and very easy to do. But the affection for his brother, his elder brother, had to be done in a different way. He had to get out the sword of sharp words, and cut his attachment. And Prabhupada writes that on the part of Maharaj Yudhisthira was quite in order. This is as far as Dhritarashtra now. It was quite in order for Maharaj Yudhisthira to maintain his uncle, after all. This was his uncle. It was in order for him to provide royal facility for his uncle. But it was wrong for Dhritarashtra to accept it. It wasn't wrong for Dhritarashtra to accept it socially, but it was wrong for Dhritarashtra to accept it because he wasn't even considering what's the alternative. He saw there's no alternative. My sons are gone. My position, my possibility of myself becoming the king is gone. My vitality is, everything's gone. So, therefore, I have to be maintained by my relatives. He wasn't seeing the spiritual alternative. There was an alternative, which he didn't even consider. And so, Vidura came to give him that alternative. And that's the glorification that the Bhagavatam is giving to Vidura or to a saintly person. The saintly person is giving the spiritual alternative in one way to the pious, in another way to the attached. And it's not easy to give the spiritual alternative to the attached. In some cases, it's just not even possible. But in the case of Vidura and Dhritarashtra, it was possible. It was possible because of their brotherly relation. It was possible because they both had affection for one another. And as we're going to see, it was also possible because actually Dhritarashtra was an exalted person. Behind all that plotting and scheming and horrible stuff, he actually had an exalted nature. I'm sure an astrologer would have a great time. You know, what's the bad signs and the good signs in his chart and all that kind of business. But he had, so there's some awful things, but he had an exalted nature behind it all. But he was blind to his spiritual alternative, and Vidura came to give that. There's one verse mentioning that while Vidura was there, but that is to say, while Yamaraj was not in his post in Yamaloka, then one of the 12 Adityas named Aryama, he took the post. Now sometimes the demigods, like when Krishna appeared, the demigods were told. Lord Vishnu told Lord Brahma, please tell the demigods to take birth in the Yadu dynasty. Now the demigods have this ability that they can expand themselves for the purpose of serving Krishna. They can be what we can't be. They can be in two places at once. So it's not like when Krishna makes his appearance, the whole demigod administration hangs out a sign out to lunch back in 100 years. But they expand, and they can perform their activities in Krishna's lila, and somehow their administrative activities carry on. In this particular case, it's mentioned by Suta Goswami that he checked out. He had to take birth in a Sudra family. So while he checked out, Aryama took his post. And everything went on in a proper way until he returned, and then he resumed his post. And but it helps us understand, it gives us again a reminder of the exalted quality of Vidura. Vidura is not just one of us who kind of, you know, gets some good fortune by meeting Maitreya. He did certainly get good fortune by meeting Maitreya. And anyone from any position can achieve that spiritual level by the grace of an exalted pure devotee. However, Vidura is in his own little category. He's actually such an exalted person in any case. In what Prabhupada writes here is he says that that Yamaraj is more busy than any of the other demigods. He's non-stop. He's got to deal with everybody that is going to a lower destination. He doesn't just have to see to the rising and the setting of the sun or the water. It's non-stop. And he's very, very learned and very, very... He doesn't want to just deal with bad people, but that's his service. So this whole situation of his being cursed by Manduk Muni was actually to fulfill a desire to go and preach the glories of the Supreme Lord. It gave him that opportunity. And of course, it gave him another opportunity. It gave him an opportunity to relieve Dhritarashtra from his condition. And now, there are people, I can just say this from my experience, there are persons who I have a very distinct impression, very nice, pious persons who are trying on the path of spiritual life, but it seems like they just get stuck. They hit a wall. And even they know what they have to do, and they can tell you what they have to do, but somehow they can't get past that wall. You experienced that? People you're dealing with here and there? I mean, just the other day, I said this explicitly to another person. I have a very clear sense. You've been in the same place many lifetimes. this thing that you're grappling with. And really all that you need to do is, with faith, take one more step. Just do it. Go ahead. One more step. Here's where you are. There's where you want to be. You don't have to go all the way. Just take one more step. Go ahead, do it. You sure? Yeah. You're right. Now you're going to do it? I hope so.
Yes.
But, so, each of us has some responsibility. We're not viduras. We're not perfected souls. We're not Yamaraj taking birth in, you know, the family of some earthly beings here, and we're not so exalted like that. But each of us can, in some way, play some part, especially by a very careful hearing of the message of Srimad Bhagavatam, to pass that message on to others, because it's very, very transcendentally uplifting. In any case, Vidura is doing that with Dhritarashtra. And that ends the section. The last verse of the section is saying, Sutta Goswami is saying that Yudhisthira Maharaj was in one position. He was religiously carrying out his duties in noble tradition of his family. He reigned peacefully. He enjoyed uncommon opulence in cooperation with his younger brothers, who were expert administrators to the common people. Yudhisthira Maharaj was such an exalted soul, the demigods would come to visit him. And his brother Arjun, he was able to go to the planets of the demigods in his self-same body. No rocket ships. Something Prabhupada comments here is that this interplanetary travel is made possible by spiritual qualification. Yeah, it's in the purport of text 14. It is only the spiritual culture of the people concerned that makes interplanetary travel possible, even in the present body. That's the Pandavas, and that's not Dhritarashtra. So, Vidura gave his association to the Pandavas one way, to Dhritarashtra another way, and the next section is, the theme of it is renunciation, and there's different kinds of renunciation, and the kind that's being recommended for Dhritarashtra is of one particular kind because of his capacity, limited capacity. Basically, get out. That kind of renunciation, which is a very incomplete form of renunciation. It's not what the Bhagavatam in general is advocating. The kind of renunciation that says just give it up. Bhagavatam's renunciation is become attached to the Supreme Lord. And when one becomes attached to the Supreme Lord, the false sense of proprietorship and enjoyership and controllership is gone. The sense of servitorship takes its place. So anyway, that's our next section. Continue tomorrow. Hare Krishna. So, any discussion on what we read? Oh, there's the first canto. All right. Yeah. What?
When the Jasa ended his life, what spiritual?
My question too. Did he attain pure devotional service?
No, he did not. There are two different versions of what he attained. One version is that he attained the heavenly planets, the other is he attained the Brahmajyoti. So, I believe the Bhagavatam describes that he attained the Brahmajyoti. But I think what I should do is read it again more carefully before I definitively answer that. Yeah, I believe that's what he attained, Brahmajyoti. We'll cover that tomorrow, at least, you know, because it certainly wasn't the spiritual, wasn't Krishna Loka, because he was not in a mood of devotion to Krishna, either during his life or at the end of life. But he was cultivating detachment. He was capable of just complete detachment, abject detachment. Anything else?
One more question, Maharaj, that comes to mind. You just mentioned that there were demigods that were coming down to the Yadu dynasty.
Yeah.
Would the Pandavas be considered some of them? Could we consider the Pandavas to be some?
No, they were sons of the demigods.
Oh, okay.
But not the demigods.
Okay.
The Vidura was Yamaraj. And Yudhisthira was the son of Yamaraj. Not the son and the father aren't the same.
So all the Kauravas who left their body at the battlefield of Kurukshetra, did they also attain Brahmajyoti or heavenly planets?
I think heavenly planets. Krishna mentions the first chapter.
In the first chapter.
About the persons, like, he mentions to Arjuna that even if you die, you can go to heavenly planets.
Yeah, that's one who performs their religious duty as a king and fights fearlessly. If they're fighting for a religious cause and they die in the battle, they'll achieve the heavenly planets. But Prabhupada explains in one purport that the persons who are on the Kurukshetra battle dying in the presence of Krishna regained their spiritual identity. Pretty merciful. Prithu's confirming. No? Sounds good?
I'm happy to hear it.
And this gets into a more elaborate discussion that, but anyway, that's what it's stated. Yeah. Prithu?
So if we take up the fight in the mood of Arjuna, as far as Krishna's mission, so there's also a similar guarantee. How do we say that according to our, as
well, Prabhupada said like this, as you are well aware, if one, because this is Prabhupada speaking to his Sankirtan heroes and soldiers in ISKCON, if one gives this one lifetime to the service of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and engages this whole life energy in carrying forward the mission of Lord Chaitanya's Sankirtan, at the time of death, he will be delivered to the spiritual world. Same idea. The battlefield is different, but it's according to the instruction of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. The receiving one who becomes recipient of the mercy of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu can similarly be delivered to the spiritual world.
Maharaj, I have a question about the form of the Supreme Being, or
okay.
what we call God.
Okay.
My understanding from speaking to the church right here is that the Supreme Being is Krishna and has a form, and the form is that of Krishna, the way he had come down a couple thousand of years ago, though he did come down as nine other forms. But I did hear you say today that Krishna is everywhere, Krishna is within everyone. What kind of form are we talking about there?
The form is the form of Paramatma. There's three... There's three aspects of the Absolute Truth. Recite one verse from the first canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. You know the meaning of the word Vedanta? You know the meaning of the word Veda?
Yes.
Veda means knowledge. And Anta means the end of. So, Vedanta is the end of all knowledge. So the verse begins, Vedanta Tat. So Tat's a pronoun meaning the absolute truth. That's what it's referring to. Those who have, they know the end of all knowledge about the absolute truth. Vedanta Tat, Tatva Vidas, Tatva Vid, similarly means, they know, Tat Vid means to know. Vedanta Tatvavidas Tatvam Yajjnanam Advayam. Advaya, Advaita. You've heard that word. Dvaita and Advaita. Mm-hmm. Advaya means not, of a non-dual nature. So we're not talking about knowledge of something down here. Knowledge of the non-dual nature. That knowledge. One who knows that perfectly. Those knowers have concluded that Brahmeti Paramatmeti, Bhagavaniti, Shabdite. So there's three. Brahman, Paramatma, and Bhagavan. Three features of the same. Three features of the same Advaya Tattva. Three. Brahman, Paramatma, and Bhagavan. So Brahman is this formless, existential feature of the Supreme. Sat. So there's Sat Chit Ananda. That's the Sat feature. Or Brahman feature. Like, if you could remove the veneer of the material energy and all of it, just, it's all gone. What's left? What is eternal? After all that's temporary is just removed. There's three features. One is Brahman, the glaring effulgence, the formless, because what is glaring effulgence? What is the form of glaring effulgence? There isn't form of glaring effulgence, it's just an effulgence, like the rays of the sun. In a spiritual sky, there is the Brahman effulgence, Brahma Jyoti. The realization of that, Brahma Jyoti, is one aspect of realization of transcendence. The knowledge that's the end of all knowledge, Vedanta. Then there's another feature. That effulgence is emanating from some source. Just like the rays of the sun, they're emanating from the sun. So that Brahma Jyoti is emanating from the Supreme. So that Supreme is situated within the heart of every living being. That Supreme has the yogis meditate upon that Paramatma feature of the Lord. The Gyanis, they're trying to understand the Lord through empiric knowledge, Gyan, and they're trying to approach moksha, liberation, by coming to know that undifferentiated, formless Supreme. Brahman. Is your question. It's approximately the size of the thumb. Now, it's not a material measurement, it's just that's the size of the heart. It's within the heart. Just spiritual form of four arms, and the details are there, from the lotus feet up to the top of the head of the Lord of the Heart, Janardana.
That form exists in the heart?
That form exists in the heart of every living being.
So we still are talking about a form.
We're speaking of Paramatma, is speaking of the form of the Lord within the heart of every living being. That Paramatma has form. And then there's Paramatmeti, Brahmeti, Paramatma, so Brahman, Paramatma, Bhagavaniti, Shabdyate. So there's another feature besides that Paramatma feature. That's the Bhagavan feature. The Bhagavan feature is the personal feature. In addition to form, what is the personality? What are the personal qualities of that Supreme? And actually, according to the detailed information found in Srimad Bhagavatam, that Paramatma situated within the heart of every living entity is an expansion of the original Supreme Living Being, Bhagavan, Swayam Bhagavan. Ete Changsa Kala Krishna, Krishna's to Bhagavan Swayam. Verses there. Saying that all these incarnations and expansions of the Lord that have been identified in this first canto of Srimad Bhagavatam are manifestations of Swayam Bhagavan Krishna. He's Bhagavan. So the Bhagavan feature and the Paramatma feature and the Brahman feature, they're all features of the one absolute truth. Different features of the absolute truth. But there is a, although they're transcendentally situated beyond any material touch or tinge even, one can say that the Bhagavan feature is the source of the other two features. They're resting upon, like Krishna says in the 14th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, Brahmano hi pratishta aham. Pratishta is a very particular Sanskrit word. Just like if you're familiar with deity installation, it's called pran pratishta. Pratishta means that the connotation of that is situated in or resting upon. It's like a truth or an existential reality upon which another thing rests existentially in reality. So Krishna is saying this Brahma, it's just like saying that the rays of the sun are resting upon the sun. So Krishna is saying this Brahman, this sat, this formless feature is resting upon it's the spiritual effulgence from me, aham, first person singular in any language. It's person, first person singular, aham. Pratishta aham, Brahmano, he means certainly, it's for emphasis, absolutely. So the feature of Supersoul, there's form. The yogis in their meditation process, they're searching for that form of the Lord. It's described what they do, how they do what they do, and what they do. Their senses are completely shut down, practically motionless, like suspended, and all their consciousness is fully concentrated in one thing. Where is that Supreme? Nothing else is going on in their consciousness. Just, and then the Supreme, at his independent will, supreme independent will, may disclose, here I am, and upon the seat of their consciousness discloses his identity in form. He discloses, this is my feature, Paramatma. But that's a partial disclosure. Because the complete disclosure is to disclose the exchange of loving transaction between the Atma and Paramatma. And the medium of that loving exchange is bhakti, loving service. So therefore, bhakti is the means that Krishna gives to realize his feature of Bhagavan. Meditation, dhyan, is the means that he gives to realize his Paramatma feature. And other processes, combining non-fruitive work and speculative reasoning powers to try to understand jnan, to try to understand that feature of Brahman. That help?
Okay.
Anything else? Yes.
Bharat is Lord Venkateshwara a demigod or a supreme personality, of course?
I don't know so much about Lord Venkateshwara, but as far as I know, personality of Godhead. Venkateshwara is worshipped. Well, Radha Gopal, what can you say about the worship of Venkateshwara?
He is. I once heard from the senior devotees telling me that he is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He is this mood of giving benedictions, material benedictions to the people, so people go to him if they have some material desires or anything for that matter. So it is the personality of Godhead himself assuming that mood of satisfying the material desires of the people.
Raja, I have a point on this. Like, there is a devotee who is told by Srila Prabhupada as ideal devotee of Supreme Personality of Godhead. His name is Kulasekhar Ambar.
Yeah.
He wrote Mukunda Mala Stotra.
Yeah.
Prabhupada himself wrote about him as, this is how an ideal devotee should be.
That's right.
And he desires for Lord Venkateshwara's abode. Like, I want to take birth in your abode as a river flowing in your abode. Or I want to become a bird.
Yeah.
And at last, if you don't give anything, I want to be the stepstone. That is, not Jivatma. I just want to be the stepstone and to see your, like...
Your pastime.
Yeah. Your lips. Always I want to meditate upon that. That is where all devas and everything Shiva, everything is worshipped. Everybody comes daily and worship you. I want to become the... stone, step stone, which is in front of you, and I always want to see your...
See, that's the case where an unalloyed devotee, like King Kulasekhar, sees the Supreme Lord not as the giver of material benediction, but the giver of spiritual perfection. Because that's actually the Supreme Lord's exclusive capacity. No one can give that but the Supreme Lord, entrance into the spiritual world. But so that doesn't contradict what Radha Gopal said. That's the picture of King Kulasekhar. He's an acharya. He's an alvar. He's a perfected soul, teaching us the path of perfection. There may be other persons who are less than perfect souls who may also engage in worship with another idea in their mind and propagating that other idea.
As for a lot of Sri Vaishnavas, if not he is the most important god, as Sri Ranganatha, he is the second most important god, deity, which is like out of the 108 shrines which they believe.
This is something that you're... If I were to go speak to a Sri Vaishnava in Sri Rangam, would they agree with what you just said?
Yes.
That Ranganatha is the number two deity for a Sri Vaishnava?
No, Sri Ranganatha is number one.
Number one.
And number two is Venkateshwara.
Okay. Now, if I went to Tirupati, and I were to ask the worshippers in Tirupati, would you agree that...
Some people like prefer Tirupati because like all the 12 alvars of Sri Vaishnava tradition, they sang about Sri Ranganatha.
Yeah.
And out of 12 alvars, 11 alvars sang about Venkateshwara. And the percentage of the hymns which are attributed to Venkateshwara is like about 30% of the 4,000 hymns.
Okay, but I'm just wondering, I don't have the answer to this question. I'm just wondering if what you just told us is something that Sri Vaishnavas universally will accept, that Venkateshwara is number two deity. And
no, I'm not saying number two.
Ranganath is number one deity.
Prefer Ranganatha.
Ah, that's a different statement. That's a very different statement. Very different statement. Thank you.
No, Maharaj, actually most people...
I understand that what you're saying. Just like, say, Bal Gopal is the preferred deity for the Ballabas. Fine. And in Vrindavan, the Gaudiya Vaishnavas, they prefer Radha Krishna worship. Fine. Then now I understand what you're saying. Okay. Okay. But when you say number one, number two, and it's...
No, it's not the rank.
Got me.
Ramanacharya himself, he once said that I'm not qualified to visit Tirupati because I'm fallen souls. Then his devotees said that if you are not going to visit, then no one else can. So that is when he walks up into the hills of Tirupati and he visits.
Oh, actually, while he was stepping the hills, because it is revealed in the Puranas that the Tirupati, the hill is like Adishesha himself.
Yeah, right.
And when he was stepping, actually, he went to his knees. He was kneeling, actually.
Because he didn't want to put his feet on the hill.
He didn't walk up with his feet. So, and while he was halfway, like, when his like uncle heard about it, he came down from there and told, like, oh, you yourself are coming like this. Then what would happen with all the other people? Nobody will come and visit Lakshmi Nasa, Venkateshwara. So you should, you should walk with your feet so that everybody will follow by there. Then only he does that.
Okay, anything else? Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.